I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with AllTrails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Does it feel different than it has in the past? A little bit. You know, I've been here for 14 years and sort of generally in my career, I haven't had much uncertainty, you know, and so I think with uncertainty does come a level of anxiety. I think that would be a lie to say that it doesn't. It has a cause sort of like, you know, some introspection along the way. Like, I think that's fair to say.
It's Jed Hoyer kicking off our third hour here on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score. I'm Anthony Heron. We have had a very Super Bowl heavy first 2 hours to our evening here. Got Alex Kuhn on the ones and twos for me throughout the show. But transition into some baseball conversation. Here's the Cubs preparing to take on the Dodgers in the Tokyo Series. So they reported a bit earlier, the pitchers and catchers. And so they are out in Mesa. And I'm guessing that my guest, my guy, does not mind that one bit. Let's go out to the Circus Sports Illinois hotline, where Andy Martinez of the Marquee Sports Network is with me. You can download the Circus Sports app today. Andy, is it nice and toasty out there?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty warm. I had to break out the sunscreen today, not to rub it into everyone's faces listening back home.
Oh, I ain't mad at you. Not one bit. My wife and I were just talking earlier today. All right, we gotta figure something out here. Now that the football season's over before the end of the month of February, what are we going to do about a little bit of free time in my schedule that's going to be a little bit enhanced as of late to get away from some of these chilly climbs? But you have a very good reason to do that, to go see what's shaking with the Cubs. And with that in mind, the Tokyo Series is the reason you get to report a bit earlier and be out there. So how are the Cubs here in the initial onset of it? Are they handling things much differently than the initial reporting time frame would usually offer them, because this is just going to enhance the length of time before the official onset of the regular season?
Yeah, so it's weird in the sense of, like, if you didn't know what date of the calendar it was, it would still feel like a spring training report date. And it's off by, like, I would say, like, 5 days, usually just like right around Valentine's Day. And it feels like it is around Valentine's Day. The only difference, and pitching coach Tommy Hodge, we spoke about this a little bit earlier today, is it's just the interactions between pitchers and hitters are happening a lot earlier. Usually there's a few days of bullpen sessions or just like side sessions for pitchers. And 2 days, there's going to be a live BP, right? Hitters are going to be facing pitchers. Pitchers are going to be facing hitters. There's going to be a real more environment there, and it's a little elongated, but talking to a lot of the coaches, the preparation started a lot earlier in terms of getting ramped up. So, like, yes, it's only about 5 days to a week that it's starting earlier, but that is a big difference in terms of preparation, because the off season nowadays, it's not like 30, 40 years ago where it's like the off season, you don't do anything. It kind of by the end of October or November, depending on when the season ends, you kind of start throwing a little bit or you start doing things. Tommy Hodge, we mentioned in terms of recovery, some of these pitchers were throwing footballs around to still get the arm moving, but it's not using the same muscles and it's not going to lead to injuries per se. And so everything started a little bit earlier for them so that when they got to this day, they're still kind of where they need to be, given that they have to ramp up, but then kind of ramp back down once they get back from Tokyo, because they're still about a week or so before the rest of the regular season kicks off. So it's a little weird, but it's the Cubs have prepared for it months in advance to get ready for this week and report date.
And from a pitching perspective, you mentioned that the staff already having interactions with hitters at a different stage, an earlier stage than they normally would in preparation for the Tokyo series. But then you also already have Javier Assad, who's got an oblique issue going on right now. So is the pitching staff kind of top to bottom and being a bit banged up here early? How much does that end up factoring into how Craig Counsell is going to be able to handle things, knowing they've got the overseas trip coming up?
Yeah, it's interesting, and Craig Counsell, Tom Howdy, we both spoke about it today, where it's like, it's going to be weird in the sense of, like, you're competing, and those two games matter, right? Those, it's two games, and it's two of 162, but those games are important, right? We've seen it 2 years ago. They missed the playoffs by a game or two. If you can count the tiebreakers, probably two games. But every single game matters. But the fact of the matter is, like, pitchers still aren't going to be fully ready to go by then, that maybe a starting pitcher is going to be going 60, 70, 75 pitches at most. And it's just not going to happen. And what the one thing that the Cubs have kind of done throughout the whole offseason is that they've just seemingly every week it was just adding a new arm. It was stockpiling arms. It was stockpiling pitchers. But that it got to the point where they had pitchers that they picked up early in the offseason that they were DFAing later in the offseason to make room for some of these new guys. Like Matt Festa was at Cubs convention because he had been claimed or he had been acquired in a trade from the Rangers. And then a week later, he's DFAed because they needed his roster spot. So, like, that's kind of the turnover that they've had because they've been acquiring so many arms. And throughout the offseason, when they added Colin Ray, when they added Matthew Boyd, you're looking at the rotation, you're thinking, like, well, they already have five guys because they said Javier Assad is going to be on the rotation, and how are they going to fit all these arms? And you got Ben Brown and Jordan Wicks, and all, you start running through these situations. And then you remember, like, this season is really long, and injuries happen throughout the course of spring training or in the middle of the season or near the end of the season, that you just need a ton of arms. And so when Javier Assad goes down one day into camp, it's like, well, that's why you brought in Colin Ray. That's why you brought in Matthew Boyd. That's why you have all these options. Because naturally, there's going to be a ton of injuries. Like, I remember growing up as a kid, like, you knew it was like five starters, and those guys are going to go the whole season, right? Those are your five guys throughout the season. You maybe have a sixth starter or something like that, but it's five guys. It's not like that anymore. You need so many arms to get through the full 162. And that's what they did, knowing that injuries are going to happen, even if they happen on the first and second day of spring training.
Well, of course, the offseason as a whole, the biggest addition, the biggest name, the most star-worthy, star-caliber player is Kyle Tucker that the Cubs added into things. How does he reshape the lineup and the potential production for those who he'll be able to perhaps shield or shelter in a certain way with what he brings to the table?
It's funny. We were just talking about it at dinner. I was talking about it with some coworkers at dinner, where it's like, I don't think Cubs fans have yet fully grasped, or maybe a lot of them have, and maybe I'm generalizing a little bit, but I don't think people have realized how good Kyle Tucker is because of the teams he's played on in Houston, right? Like, he was probably like the third or fourth biggest name because they had Yordan Alvarez, Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, like Carlos Correa. You throw names and they were probably all ahead in terms of just name and star power over Kyle Tucker. But last year, in the 79 games that he played before he got hurt, he was by far the best player and was on track, was probably going to be like an MVP candidate if he stayed healthy, right? He had a 4.9 WAR, would have led the team and the Cubs team, even though he only played less than half of a season. Like, he is really, really good. And I go back to last year, I go back to 2023 when they were struggling in May and June. It was like the whole offense was slumping and they didn't have one guy going for them. Kyle Tucker is going to slump, like every player slumps, but his slumps are different than most player slumps, right? Like, some player might go through like an 0 for 18 or an 0 for 22. Kyle Tucker's slump is like, oh, he's only hitting 240, 250 this 2 week span. Like, you'll take that, right? Like, that's still pretty good because he's going to end up hitting around 300. Like, he is a pretty good hitter and he plays really, really good defense. That I think the defense also gets overlooked a little bit because of how strong the offense is. You already have a Gold Glover in left field in Ian Happ. You have, I think it was probably going to win a few Gold Gloves throughout his career in Pete Crow Armstrong in center field. And now you had Kyle Tucker, who also has a Gold Glove. Like, that's a really good outfield defensively. That's going to save some runs, going to save some outs for the pitching staff. So it's just a really, really great addition for the Chicago Cubs this year.
And with the center field addition of having Pete Crow Armstrong being there full time throughout the full scope of the season, assuming health, how important is offensive growth? Because he certainly seemed to show it down the stretch last year. But, you know, do you anticipate him, you know, looking to hit for more power, or just having consistency in his eye at the plate being the most important thing?
Yeah, I think it's going to be the latter, right? I think he will have more power, and maybe it won't be this year, maybe in the coming years. Like, he's kind of shown throughout the minor league level that he usually starts really slow at a new level, and then he kind of hits an offensive groove. And I don't want to say, like, because he did it at single A or because he did it at double A, like, he's going to do it at the majors, because the majors are a totally different beast and a totally different monster. But it's kind of what he did in 2024, right? He was really, really struggling. Like, for as good of his last 2 months that he had offensively, his offensive numbers were, like, I think he still hit, like, 220 because of how much he struggled early on in the season. That they, like, you need that offense to arise. But the defense is so good that, like, if this season, if we're talking in October, November about Pete Crow Armstrong's season and he has like a 5-WAR season, I wouldn't be surprised by that, just given his defense. And I think his offense will improve. I don't think he's the leadoff hitter. Like, I think we all fall in love with, like, oh, he can steal like 40 bags. Like, he's going to be a leadoff hitter. He might be a leadoff hitter in the future, but right now he just doesn't get on base enough. The offense isn't there to be a leadoff hitter, but I do expect him to continue to take growth in his offensive game. I think there will be some struggles along the way, but I think for the most part, we're going to see some semblance of what we saw the last 2 months in Pete Crow Armstrong throughout the course of 2025.
We know that Seiya Suzuki has preferred to be able to continue being in the outfield, even though he's been ineffective and seemingly uncomfortable there at times in his actual execution. But now with Tucker in the lineup, he'll likely be the DH on a regular basis, perhaps a full-time basis. Do you see that potentially having a positive impact on how consistent he'll be in the batter's box?
I would think so, just because, like, it keeps him off his feet a little bit. Maybe it reduces the likelihood he gets injured. Now, some of the injuries he's had throughout his 3-year big league career have been like oblique injuries, and some a couple have been on swings, if I remember correctly. Like, it hasn't necessarily been on the field, but maybe getting him off his feet a little bit will help in that regard. I mean, he's still going to play some outfield, right? Like, Tucker, PCA, Ian Happ, they're not going to play 162 games, and Seiya Suzuki will kind of rotate in left and right field, I would think, to spell a day off for some of those guys, or maybe Tucker or Happ get a DH day to get them off their feet. But he was really good in the DH role. He was hitting over 300, had like a 900 OPS the last 37 games where he was DHing full-time. It's not an easy thing to do. Like, a lot of players really struggle in the DH role. I remember talking to Christopher Morel multiple times, and he told me how hard it is to DH. Like, you don't feel like you're in the game, and you make one out, and you feel like that out is like 7 outs because you don't hit as frequently. You can't make up for it on defense. Like, you just sit there and the outs weigh on you. Seiya Suzuki doesn't have that problem. Like, he was hitting really well in the DH spot. He can do it. Like, that's not something that should be overlooked too easily. That, yeah, maybe it helps them and maybe solidifies the lineup a little bit with him being able to be a 4 or 5 or 3 hitter and being able to kind of balance out that lineup a little bit more.
I certainly hope so, because it feels like when he's on and he's got this great eye at the plate, then he can enhance what they do offensively. It can be one of those guys who doesn't slump as poorly, but just feels like his confidence is such a big factor in how he tends to operate there. Continuing our conversation with Andy Martinez of Marquee Sports Network. Nico Horner, certainly one of our favorite guests that we have on the station here, banged up right now. What's your sense for the recovery timeline for Nico?
It's such a weird one. Like, at Cubs convention, Carter Hawkins, Jed Hoyer, they were kind of like, you know, ask Nico how he feels. Like, you know, I think he's going to be okay. Like, ask him how he feels. And then we asked Nico how he feels at Cubs convention. He's like, I haven't swung a bat yet. I have not thrown yet. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be ready for opening day. There's like 3 opening days this year, right? There's Japan, there's Arizona, and then there's a home opener. Like, which opening day are you talking about? So it was like a really weird situation where it was like, so what is the truth here? And Craig Counsell gave a little bit more clarity today where he said he expects Nico Horner to play a lot. Like, he expects Nico Horner to play a majority of the season. Does that mean he's ready for opening day? I think it's still a little too early to determine that. I don't think, and I shouldn't say I don't think, they're not going to rush him to just try and get him to play two games in LA, right? Like, or against LA and Tokyo. Like, they're going to take it. They're going to make sure he's fully healthy. Part of the reason he had this surgery was if Dansby Swanson at any point last year had gone down with an injury and they needed a backup shortstop, Nico Horner probably couldn't have played because of the arm injury. And that was a major issue, right? Like, you lose a Gold Glover. Theoretically, you have another Gold Glove caliber defender in Nico Horner at shortstop. But that wasn't the case because of his injury. Now with the surgery and being healthy, he should be able to give backup to Dansby Swanson at shortstop. And that's a big thing, and that's what they wanted. And so it gives them a lot of cover. It gives them a lot of help in that situation. But ultimately, like, it's just a little bit of an unknown. I think he'll still play probably 150-plus games. But if he's playing in Tokyo right now, I just don't know. And I would think probably it's a little bit unlikely. But again, we just have to wait and see.
You were mentioning Craig Counsell, of course, and the way that he's going about helping Jed massage this roster and figure out exactly what the lineup will look like here. Now that he's actually got pitchers and catchers reported and they're preparing to head overseas in the not-too-distant future, there is at least a sense, an observation, a look for how he's operating during this spring training versus where he was last year, what was all fairly new to him with the Cubs. What are your observations of Counsell himself and how, if at all, he may be different in just heading up this season from the launch versus where he was last year when it was all fairly new?
He's like this is going to sound so boring, but he's like kind of the same guy. Like he, at least outwardly, is the same guy, but he has mentioned like it is a little bit easier knowing like you walk in the door and you know who you're talking to, you know who they are. There's a little bit more familiarity in terms of knowing players and their cues, right? Like when he came in last year, if Justin Steele was pitching in the fifth inning and Justin Steele was tired, but his pitch count was low, Craig Counsell might not have known that, right? Like he didn't necessarily know the cues. He has all that familiarity. He has all that background. Like he kind of knows his players a little bit better. And I think that should help him a lot. But honestly, like if talking to him, he's kind of the same guy that he was last year. Like and that's kind of the one thing I've learned about Craig is like, he is just the same guy. Like what you see on TV is like kind of what you get. He's not a different persona or anything. Like he is just a steady Eddie kind of character for the Cubs, which is in a lot of ways is what players want in a manager, right? Like you don't want someone that's like stressing out during the tough times and getting too giddy during the good times. Like he is that steady balance, that steadying force for players that they look to.
And Jed Hoyer referenced a bit of that apprehension, if you will, with the sound that we played coming out of break here. Do you see him? Is there a move or moves that you feel confident he'll continue to make before we actually get back to the domestic opening day for the Cubs?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the multi-million dollar question, right? Is there another signing up their sleeve? The name obviously that everyone keeps talking about is Alex Bregman. And
right.
I think if they're going to get an Alex Bregman, it's going to be on a contract that's similar to what Cody Bellinger got, right? It's a short-term contract, high AAV, with an opt-out probably after the first year. I think that's the way they would look at it. Clearly, that's not what Bregman's after right now, or at least that's what's been said he's not after. So it's hard to at least right now in this moment, see a solution per se. But I also think they're okay with going with Matt Shaw at third base. Because he is a top 100 prospect. He is going to eventually have to get to the big leagues, right? Like you can't just stash him at AAA forever. Like he has to come up and they are confident in his skills. So would they take Alex Bregman? Yeah. A lot of teams would take Alex Bregman, but they're also okay with their in-house options of Matt Shaw potentially winning that third base job and going out and being the everyday third baseman and seeing what he can do with an extended run.
And Showtime, Shota Imanaga, he was certainly my favorite addition that the Cubs made last offseason and was fantastic and fun and all-star caliber throughout the majority of the year. Will he come back down to earth at all now that everyone's kind of gotten through him a couple of times as he's gotten a full season under his belt with the Cubs? Or can we count on having, at least three consistently excellent starters that they'll be able to put on the mound?
My gut tells me like there has to be some regression, right? Like he has to kind of come down to earth, so to speak. But like throughout last season, I kept thinking well, he can't one-up what he's done. He can't one-up what he's done. And then he's an all-star. And then he throws a no-hitter. And then he just keeps doing seemingly every outing. It's like, well, there's nothing that's surprising me. He is, like, a very cerebral guy in terms of how he works. Like, he really thinks through things. Today, yeah, I'm actually writing a story for tomorrow about this, where he was talking about how, like, how would you assess your first season and did you exceed your expectations? And he's like, well, my WAR, my wins above replacement, was only a 3, and Yamamoto, who pitched way less innings than me, was a 2.8. So, like, clearly I have some room to grow because I pitched way more than him, and I wasn't as valuable to my team because I only had a 3.0 WAR. And it was just, like, fascinating and almost refreshing to hear that. And he mentioned Paul Skenes having, like, a 5-plus WAR season and him pitching way less innings than him. And he's talking about how, like, he wants to improve to be to that caliber of pitcher. And it's like, okay, like, this guy clearly is never satisfied with what he did, that I wouldn't be surprised if he does something similar or even better than what he did last year, because he is that kind of thinker and really wanting to learn and improve in his game. Like, the pitching philosopher nickname that he has from Japan, that's pretty accurate to who he is.
Before I let you run, is there a player, whether it's an everyday guy, a pitcher, that you're most eager to watch them compete during the spring here, if it's to see if they can sustain what they showed at some point last season or just build upon what might be some potential that they have there?
So the name I'm looking at, I'll give you two, is one's Alexander Canario, going into his last option year, outfielder, came in the Chris Bryant deal, like has a really good swing, like, has had power in the minor leagues, but has struggled to stay healthy. It's going to be interesting if he can stay healthy and perform, given that he has to kind of make the team because he's out of options or what happens there. The other is Kevin Alcantara. Like, everyone I've talked to, people have raved about him and what he could be. And Pete Crow Armstrong's a really great defender, and everyone talks about how good of a defender he is. Kevin Alcantara is probably, like, a notch below and would probably be, like, one of the better defender prospects on any other team. He just happens to be with Pete Crow Armstrong. So those are two names that I'm really looking forward to watching in an extended run in minor league camp, because I think they will be contributing in some form or fashion to the major league club in 2025.
It's a lot to look forward to, a season of excitement here in this division that certainly allows the Cubs the opportunity to see if they can not only win the division, but maybe make a push in the postseason. We are just in the infancy of it. Always enjoy reading your writing and seeing you on the Marquee Sports Network, Andy. Thanks for your time, man.
Thanks for having me.
That is Andy Martinez of the Marquee Sports Network. You can find him on social media at amartinez_11. Well, we did mention a little bit earlier in the show, talked about former Bears coach Dick Geron, the fact that he passed over the weekend. We've heard from a variety of folks, and I'm sure you've been reading some of the things that have been said about the Bears' former head coach and just what he's meant to so many individuals. And we had one of the Bears' all-time greats on the station this morning talking about just that. So I'll give you my observations on Dick Geron, and we'll hear from Olin Krutz on that topic as well after a quick timeout here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes, and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With All Trails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Your life isn't one size fits all. Every day brings something different. Your style should too. At Maurices, we make it easy to show up feeling comfortable, confident, and completely you. Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look your best. From tried-and-true denim to head-turning looks, we've got styles that fit your life and your budget. Fashion made for real-life moments. Maurices.
No matter why your clients give, their donations can do so much more with a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360. They can donate cash, publicly traded securities, or other non-cash assets like real estate and even crypto, while recommending grants at any time. DAF Giving 360 can offer you over 25 years of expertise, bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together to make a greater impact. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's a lot of folks who end up devoting their lives and their livelihood to athletic endeavors and to careers in sports. And the Bears have lost multiple individuals in that regard here in recent days. Of course, the matriarch of the franchise, Virginia McCaskey, passed late last week. And now over the weekend, former Bears coach Dick Geron was lost as well at 74 years old. And Dick Geron was a guy who spent 36 seasons in the NFL, just 8 of those as a player, so a lengthy playing career, and then spent 28 years as a coach in football. And he was the head coach of the Bears for 5 seasons from 99 to 2003. And after being here in Chicago a couple of years and building things up, became the NFL's coach of the year in 2001 with that 13-3. That one of the worst to first seasons that I talked about late last week, where the Bears went 13-3 in 01. And, you know, it was a season where, unsurprisingly, defense and special teams were leading the way for the Bears, because when they've had their best teams, that certainly tends to be the case. That tends to be the way the Bears go about things, making big plays on defense and being highlighted by sort of magical moments on special teams. And Dick Geron's squad in 01 was one of those that pulled that off to a 13-win season. But he, of course, didn't only coach the Bears, spent decades in the National Football League as one of the most respected defensive minds in the game, and impacted a lot of folks, positively impacted and influenced a lot of people and a lot of lives around the football world. And one of those was one of the Bears' great players here. And Olin Cruz was on the station earlier today with Mully and Hall talking about a wide variety of topics, but he spoke about both Virginia McCaskey and Dick Geron and the legacy that he, as one of the Bears' all-time greats, felt that they left behind, and certainly the impact that they each had on him. Let's start with Olin Cruz talking about Virginia McCaskey and the way that she's been perceived by himself and other great Bears players.
Yeah, first of all, a very sad week, right? And we saw with Virginia, passed away at 102, and we all in that building, as you guys know, you guys were media in that building, what it meant when she walked around the building. She was an icon, man. She was George Halas's daughter. She was the owner of the team. She was the one, and Lovey and Coach Geron and everyone impressed upon us that that's who we were playing for. We were playing, representing her family, her team, the Chicago Bears. It just meant so much to be in that building. Whenever you saw her, you just did not want to let her down. You did not want to disappoint her. So obviously, guys, I said it before, and I'm sure you guys have said it, our best in McCaskey family. I'm sure they're feeling that loss, as we all are in Chicago.
And regardless of how old you are or how old a parent is when you lose them, when you've been close with that person throughout your entire life, then you certainly feel that loss deeply. You know, I just lost my dad a couple of years ago. And even in Jalen Hurts winning a Super Bowl last night, I spent a bunch of time thinking about my dad. And he lived, you know, beyond 80 years of life and, you know, lived a life between the Vietnam War and being a black man born in 1940 in Winona, Mississippi. There's a lot of reasons where maybe my dad shouldn't have seen 81 years old, but he did. And so I always appreciate that, just the age he made it to and the impact he had on my life. But when we lost him, it was still a big deal. And I still feel that. I think about him constantly. And even last night where, you know, we love talking sports and we love debating sports. And even back when Jalen Hurts was in college at Alabama and losing the starting job to Tua Tagovailoa and then transferring to Oklahoma and then early in his career with the Eagles. At kind of every step along the way in discussing Jalen Hurts, my dad was always a big proponent of Jalen Hurts and talking about how, you know, some of the intangibles that I described in Jalen Hurts earlier that have made him exceptional and made him a winner at every step along the way. My dad saw that really early in Jalen Hurts and was always feeling like that guy should be back in the lineup. Like, yeah, Tua can pass, but Jalen Hurts is a winner. He's a big-time winner. He's a guy who just kind of seizes these moments, and he just couldn't understand. Like, how come nobody wants this guy to be their starting QB? How come everybody's hating on Jalen Hurts all the time? And I used to argue with him about, like, yeah, I mean, he's good, he's fine, but he's got a lot of growth he needs to have as a passer. And I would say all these kind of same things that you hear about the naysayers of Jalen Hurts. And my dad was on it early. My dad was all over the Jalen Hurts thing, watching Jalen Hurts, you know, they're hoisting the Super Bowl trophy at the end. Thinking about that just through the context of conversations I had with my dad about a million different things, but about that specific one that he was so right so early about Jalen Hurts, and I was wrong. You know, add me to the list of a bunch of other folks who just kind of thought Jalen Hurts had this ceiling, and that ceiling did not include being a quarterback who could lead teams to Super Bowls. And now here he is, been there two out of the last 3 years, and also hoisted that trophy and an MVP last night. So however old you are, however old your parent is, when they've been a big positive impact and influence on your life, you think about it forever. And so I think about that in relation to the McCaskey family and losing Virginia and what she's been to the sport, what she's been as this encyclopedia of NFL history and this beacon of what the league has meant and what the Halison McCaskey family has been to the football world and representing the Bears. It's hard to imagine just everything she's witnessed in her football life. And then you also have Dick Geron, amongst a series of Bears coaches who've coached the team in the decades since they last won a Super Bowl. But even a coach like that, who, you know, isn't regarded, isn't hailed as one of the great coaches in league history, but did have that individual accolade from the 2001 season where the Bears go 13-3 and they win a division and they're able to make postseason play. And if not for an injury to Jim Miller, who knows? Maybe things even go better for the Bears in the postseason. But Dick Geron himself, or Olin Cruz, went about describing his relationship with Dick Geron, a guy he played for early in his career, and the impact that he felt, the influence that he felt from Dick Geron in his time getting to know him.
As far as Dick Geron goes, like you said, he was the second coach of my career, my second year in the NFL. I learned so much from that man, just about being a man, being a football player. The thing was, he was a football player, right? He was. Yep. He did play in the NFL. And you could tell that when he coached you, when he taught you things, taught you how to play in the NFL, taught you how to be a pro. Ultimate professional, man. Ultimate team guy. Ultimate way to carry yourself like a man. Learn how to be a dad from that guy. A young guy like me, 22 years old, coming out of Hawaii, watching the way he carried himself, watching the way he treated his wife, watching the way he treated his daughter. So he sadly lost one also. I remember, guys, Coach Geron had his little way of just telling you, like, Olin, you didn't play good enough, right? You didn't do enough there. And I remember being shocked that a quiet guy would look me in my eyes and tell me basically I sucked. But that's the way he carried himself. He never lied to you. I remember one time, and he was so smart, right? He graduated from Yale. I think he has all the awards that Yale could give out. But we had the referees, and the referees would come talk to you every year in camp. And Coach Geron stood in front of the room, and he said, basically, none of us want to listen to the referees talk, right? We get the hell out of those meetings, try to get to the bar as fast as we can. Dick Geron said, guys, These guys are like you guys. They're the best in the world at what they do. And we all sat up like, yeah, we are. We are the best. And, you know, in one sentence, guys, he showed you how smart he was. He buttered up the whole room. In one sentence, we all felt like we were the greatest in the world. He had a way of doing that for you. Man, just you know, my condolences to his family and anybody who knows Coach Dick Charron, because that is a loss. For anybody who knew that man, that is a loss.
Coaches have the ability, the opportunity to impact people, to influence people, and that leadership that they at least have the potential to display, it can be something that carries on with all these different athletes who they influence in the years afterwards. And, you know, to hear a guy like Olin Krutz, who certainly had several different coaches who he was around throughout his professional career and his collegiate career, and, you know, had a great career as a player in his own right. But that reverence that he talks about Dick Charron with, who certainly isn't the coach we won the most games with during his playing days. That would have been Lovie Smith, of course. But there's a reverence you can have because you go through so many situations. You put so much work in. And some of these, you know, environments that you're in feel really grave. And it can feel like the world is closing in on you because of the fanaticism of the following that, you know, that the NFL has, that individual teams have, like the Chicago Bears and this brand, and how passionate all of you are about it, then you go through stuff together when you're a coach and a player and a locker room. And when you have a coach that leaves a positive impact on you, that has that type of legacy, then, you know, it carries on with you. And it's great to hear, and, you know, talk to a bunch of guys who played for Dick Charron at multiple teams that he coached with, who have so much reverence for what he was as a person, how he carried himself. I was using the word humility in talking about him earlier because he's not a guy who, you know, sort of spoke loudly and carried this big stick out there. But that honesty that Olin was referencing there in the clip we just played, I was even talking about that on the midday show earlier, because that was what, you know, a lot of different folks who played for Dick Charron had been around him that have described him to me, because I never got to play for Dick, but, you know, that would talk about the way that he was willing to tell you at times very bluntly exactly what he thought about your performance. And as much as with this last regime and the Bears being led by Matt Eberflus, and just wonder, you know, whether or not there was a level of accountability and or credibility that was felt within the locker room with Matt Eberflus, with Dick Charron, as a guy who, you know, wasn't this huge personality or this domineering influence as a coach, but the players always knew where he stood as himself and where he stood on their performance. And that's one of those things that carries a lot of weight in a locker room as well. And so, you know, he certainly left a really positive impact, even as a guy who was only leading the Bears for a handful of years, and, you know, only a couple of those years could be viewed as being, you know, very successful. But you still, even as a coach, if you're not leading a team to championships, you spend so much time leading these guys and dictating how their lives as players and on the field get led, that there's an impact that's going to happen one way or another. It's either going to be positive or negative usually. It's usually not just this flat line monotone kind of thing. You can tell Dick Charron definitely had a really positive impact on a lot of the different players he coached over the years. I'll take my final time out and come back, get a little bit back into, you know, some of the events from the Super Bowl, because we only get these once per year. And one of the things that folks really look forward to, I was talking about the halftime show a bit earlier, but haven't talked about the commercials yet. I know it's a really big deal for you guys in my household. My wife and our son really love getting into those as well. And observing some of those commercials, going to highlight a few of my favorites and some of the ones I didn't dig so much. We'll get into that next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with AllTrails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday.
How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style.
Our over 800 stylists are here to help you look and feel your best. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
No matter why you give, your donations can do so much more with a donor-advised fund from DAFGiving 360. You can get a tax deduction upon funding an account, and your assets can potentially grow tax-free as you recommend when and where to give. It's a tax-smart way to maximize your charitable giving from a fund with over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together. Make a greater impact with DAFGiving 360. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
We're back live with more Anthony Herrick on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
One of the things that folks tend to really dig about the entire production that is the Super Bowl is, of course, the halftime show. I was talking about the halftime show a bit earlier, Kendrick Lamar, and you know, the fact that, I mean, I don't know his catalog that great. I became more familiar with it over the past year, just in, you know, knowing everything that was playing out between him or between he and Drake. And then going into the Super Bowl halftime show and just kind of even thinking about it a bit in the days or even weeks coming into the game last night, I was wondering, like, does Kendrick even have enough hits to pull off a full Super Bowl halftime show without adding other folks into the mix with him? And the answer is probably no, but the layers and the intricacies of the show itself weren't necessarily all about just trying to play a bunch of bangers that everybody know the words to throughout the entire show. It had, you know, a lot of messaging within it that, you know, some folks dug, some folks didn't. I ended up leaving kind of feeling like thoughtful and relatively entertained between Sam Jackson and certainly Serena, like I was talking about earlier in the show as well. There was a lot to it that made me say, okay, I get the message that you're going for right there. So I enjoyed that aspect of it. But I went into it knowing that I probably wasn't going to know all the Kendrick songs anyway. So my expectations were a little bit different than what went into it for probably some other folks who were just hoping to really hear and see all the musical entertainment aspects of it. But beyond the halftime show, the commercials themselves, of course, end up being a huge deal for the non-football aspect of what the Super Bowl is as an entertainment venture. And there was one commercial that folks really apparently weren't that into that I actually dug. I loved it quite a bit. It had two of my favorite comedic actors from back in the day.
I can't believe they let us back in this place.
Why?
Hello?
Nobody remembers that.
Something wrong?
Not doing it.
No good?
Nothing.
Well, we can't have that. What's happening? Here we go.
Oh my God.
Oh boy.
So good. It's just.
This one's real.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Lunch and a show, huh? Ooh. How about that?
That is a sandwich. I'll have what she's having.
I'm competing with a condiment.
So I loved it. And, you know, in my nostalgic sensibilities, As a proud member of Gen X, I dug it, man. Like, whatever year When Harry Met Sally came out, I mean, that was one of the big pop culture scenes from that movie that has sort of stood the test of time since then, with Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal at the table. And, you know, she was just proving that she could fake that climactic moment. And so they utilized it here, however many decades later, in a Super Bowl ad. There's been a lot goofier and more corny things that have been in Super Bowl ads than that. But to me, because I love that movie, When Harry Met Sally, it's just a clever and hilarious movie between the two of them. And I was into it. I liked it. As soon as it popped up, you knew exactly where it was going to go. I was ready for it, and I thought it delivered. That was just my thoughts on it. A couple other commercials that I really liked a lot. Nike had their Super Bowl ad that featured Caitlin Clark and Asia Wilson, Sabrina Ionescu, and Jordan Chiles, just kind of showcasing some of the top female athletes in the world, really. But Sha'Carri Richardson of Olympic fame, a part of that commercial also. And then the NFL's flag football commercial, where there's kind of a push to get flag football and have that considered as a varsity sport in different states around the country. And, you know, to have that, where just every Super Bowl now we're seeing some version of the NFL looking to feature and focus on and appeal to female athletes playing their sport, then, you know, it does seem to be becoming more effective and impactful. And I thought the Flag 50 commercial was really well done, and especially with the closing shot of the reverse hurdle with the splits in the air as the dude's diving between the legs and everything. So I thought that was well done. A couple that I didn't love so much, the Mountain Dew commercial with Seal being a seal. I just thought that was weird. Maybe my standards are high, because one of my many, many nicknames I had back in the day in college was Big Seal. Folks thought I had a bit of a resemblance to the singer. And then also, for whatever reason, the whole like little farmer thing didn't really tug at my heartstrings that much. Just like a girl doing too much to grow a potato. It's like, oh, that's the whole payoff? She's got to hand a potato to somebody and eat some Lay's chips? I don't know. Maybe go with a better brand of chips or something like that, if we're going to have that long journey to get to the climactic moment in a commercial. That's just me. Maybe it's my cold, dead heart or something like that. I don't know. But the show hopefully was not cold and dead for any of you out there. My thanks to Herb Howard for joining us in the show. Mike Yam as well. Andy Martinez talks some baseball with me throughout the night also. Of course, my thanks to Alex Kuhn for holding everything down on the other side of the glass this evening. And as always, appreciations and salutations to all of you for listening in. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
With over 25 years of expertise, DAFGiving 360's donor advised funds can help you get a tax deduction and potentially grow your charitable dollars tax-free while you recommend when and where to give. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow, Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.